Hi, everyone.
Welcome to Rates and Lanes with your hosts, Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Rates and Lanes podcast with Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow. Unfortunately, Rico Muhammad is not with us tonight. He had an issue, and instead, I'm going to be co-hosting with my son, Doc Snow. And we have a special guest tonight, Avery Vice, Vice President of FTR. We're going to bring him on right now. When I do the show, I don't do the DOT report just to upset Rico because he loves doing it. So, Rico, if you're listening, I got you. Anyways, ladies and gentlemen, let's give a big hand for Avery. Avery, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chuck. Good to be here.
Well, appreciate you. We had a little bit of a technical difficulty tonight, and I've got my daughter Carly as the sound engineer, and she's doing a great job. I want you, Avery, I want you to meet my son, Doc, who grew up in the logistics and trucking industry. Doc, this is Avery. He's with FTR. They do some wonderful things. You've read all about them, I'm sure. And Avery, without wasting any of our listeners' time or your time, what's going on out there? There's craziness all over. What are you seeing?
Yeah, it absolutely is. You know, I can't remember the date that I was on last. I think it was probably during the, you know, lockdown period here in the United States.
Right.
So I'm guessing it was in April sometime. And, you know, it's pretty amazing how different things are, with the exception of the pandemic itself, which seems to be sort of coming back as strong as it was back then. But the economy in the trucking market, though, is just very different. You know, looking at the spot metrics, for example, I remember one of the big topics of the conversation during that show was just how abysmal rates were and, you know, whether there needed to be some kind of congressional intervention and all of that. And while, you know, rates, the spot rates are not exactly 2018, they are actually really very, as of very recently, in fact, the last week, they are above the five-year average. And
right.
And so it's been quite a run since they had bottomed back a week, I think about week 16 of the year. And in fact, the only time they were down at all was the week before last, and they came back again. And so out of the, you know, last 12 weeks, we've had 11 weeks of rate increases. And you know, if you look at the truckstop.com system, the market demand index, which is the ratio of loads to trucks, is the highest in 2 years. And if you look at dry van, you know, it is the highest, you know, of all time. So it is, it's a, you know, it's a very tight market out there suddenly. It's not clear how long it's going to last for a lot of reasons, but,
yeah.
But, you know, right now things are, you know, things are pretty strong.
Go ahead.
And Avery, what do you attribute that to? Do you think a lot of that is the federal unemployment benefits and drivers staying home? Do you think it's companies that have furloughed drivers that haven't brought them back? Or what do you think the primary factors
are?
Yeah,
I think there's a combination of all of that. I think we obviously have capacity that is very tight. I mean, we had a you know, an unprecedented reduction in payroll employment in March and April, have only added back kind of a portion of that seasonally adjusted. And you do have to look at the number seasonally adjusted, because, you know, there's a whole lot of freight that moves in June, and it's going to always move in June, produce, for example. And so, you know, there's a lot of hiring that goes on then anyway. So, you know, that when you take that off the top, you know, we haven't really added back a lot of capacity. So that's certainly one issue, but I think there's a lot going on. It's not totally clear to me that what we're seeing in the spot market is, you know, 100%, you know, reflection of what's happening in the overall freight market, because, you know, it's not just a question of, you know, payroll employment being down and you know, trucks not being seated, but also just the fact that you have a lot of abnormal freight activity because you had such a disruption in consumption and production. And, you know, in May, it was, you know, it's kind of interesting because you had this strong increase in retail sales off what admittedly was a very low bottom in April, but, you know, very, very strong, but it didn't really affect trucking very much. And a lot of that was because, you know, people were buying off inventory that was already sitting in stores. So there wasn't really a whole lot of transportation required, except on the part of the people who are actually leaving their homes for the first time in, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. And then, you know, June, however, was a completely different story for a couple of reasons. One is you had to start replenishing that inventory, that consumer inventory, and then you also had the industrial sector coming back. And so, you know, in fact, today our friends at ATA just released their index for June, and it was up very sharply, even though in May it was actually down month over month, which is sort of hard to believe that you could have anything in May that was down from April, but in fact it was, the ATA index was. So you've got a lot of disruption still in carriers that have not returned their employment levels, and so they can't cover all their loads. So, and you have a lot of disruption in normal network freight. So it's kind of, you know, the old cliche of perfect storm. You do have capacity reduction on one side and you have unusual activity on the other. And to the point you made, that in the United States, this has been fueled, you know, in large degree by the federal government. You know, you look at the unemployment benefits that are out there, and you look at the Paycheck Protection Program, and then you look at the economic impact payments of $1,200 per taxpayer. And you take all of that away, and the economy would have collapsed. I mean, just absolutely would have collapsed. And the thing is, in less than 10 days, or actually in exactly 10 days, those generous unemployment benefits disappear. You're back to basically just standard unemployment, which is a fraction of what people make normally. And then you also are to the point where you're going to start exhausting those Paycheck Protection Program loans. And so it's vitally important, in my opinion. You know, we can debate the ideology and the politics of it, but from an economic standpoint, I think Congress has no choice but to, you know, shovel out a lot more money, in the coming couple of weeks.
Is that going to the long-term result of that is, I can't see it as being positive. What do you think?
No, I mean, the problem is I can't remember, there's a couple of sayings there. One is the famous John Maynard Keynes, you know, in the long run, we're all dead kind of thing. But then, the other one is that the long run is just a series of short runs. And you're absolutely right. It sort of frightens me what the long-term consequences, because we've already gone into trillions of deficit spending and or inflationary move, if you want to throw in what the Federal Reserve has done. And, you know, it's hard to not see consequences for that in the long run. Without it, I don't know that we could get to that long run. So we're in a no-win situation to some degree, because there's just been so much demand destruction. And, you know, there's a school of thought that, well, we stop paying unemployment and then people will just go back to work because they have to go back to work. Well, the problem with that is that there's been, a lot of businesses that haven't survived. And, you know, right now we've got about 31 million Americans in the United States who are receiving unemployment benefits of, you know, that $600 a week. So if that stops, if it stops cold, which I think is highly unlikely, although it's probably going to get reduced, but if it were to stop cold, we're talking on the order of $75 billion a month in cash flow that just completely evaporates from the system. And I don't think, especially with cases, I mean, you know, the good news has been that for the last, in the United States, for the last several days, the number of new cases is coming down. Of course, it's coming down. It's still coming down at levels that are more than twice what they were, you know, just 6 weeks ago. So, you know, the trend line is, the very recent trend line is encouraging, but it, you know, it's still very high. And as we've already learned, you know, just because it's coming down doesn't mean it can't go back up. I mean, I think one of the big concerns that a lot of us have is that the last 6 weeks or at least 4 weeks have shown that there is no defeating it outright, probably until we have a vaccine. So that raises a whole bunch of issues, I think, in the coming months about how we approach things like returning to school and things like that. I mean, the good news is that we have not seen any movement toward, you know, shutting down production facilities like we saw, obviously, in late March and April. And that, you know, or even really shutting down retail. You know, we have certainly seen movement toward, you know, shutting down dine-in restaurants and obviously closing bars and you know, not reopening movie theaters and things like that. Those are relatively minor, especially as far as freight is concerned. Because as we saw during the pandemic, a lot of food gets consumed, even through restaurants. It's just not consumed indoors.
My theory is that we're probably consuming more being at home rather than eating in restaurants, because I think people tend to eat more when they're at home. You eat that second chicken breast that the restaurant doesn't serve you. You know, and you know,
yeah, that's a good point. It is the jury's a little out at this point as to whether food has been a wash. It's pretty close to a wash in our forecast. It is, we're showing it down a little, but certainly not anything that is, you know, that is catastrophic. You know, and then food and beverage stores, of course. I mean, you know, obviously, if you want to look at individual players, you know, the sales for that sector, you know, are dramatically higher today on a seasonally adjusted basis than they were in February. So, you know, that's just a function of we're not going as much to restaurants. We're not going, obviously, to sports arenas. We're not going to concerts. We're not going to conferences. You know, all of those things where we have, and we're not flying through airports nearly as much. So all of that institutional consumption, you know, has, you know, I wouldn't say totally dried up, but it is certainly a fraction of what it was. So it's definitely been a boon, obviously, in certain segments, you know, depending on who you are. If you, if you've been a traditional hauler, you know, to grocery stores, then you're probably doing better now than you were in February. You know, obviously there are some major institutional food service companies that, you know, they can't say that. So,
But they're changing. You know what? I noticed that there's a, one of the big ones is near, not too far from where our office is. And I've noticed all of a sudden, and they've never done this up in Canada, they're opening up a division to the public to try to get in on the retail sales. And I know they've done that in the U.S. For
yes. I mean, I don't think it's a secret. So we can, I mean, you may be referring to Sysco, but I mean, Sysco is here in the States.
Okay.
Okay. So yeah, here, you know, And really, they acted pretty quickly. I would say by April, they were already doing that in the United States, Cisco was. And actually, they got into brokerage as well, which you may be you may be aware of. And so, a lot of companies have adjusted, to the new, to what is potentially a new normal. I mean, certainly, if we look at the fall, even if things calm down, I think we're certainly looking at a reduced school presence, and so that's going to have some major food service implications as well. And, to your point, it's not necessarily going to reduce food consumption, but it's certainly going to mean, less, less of the typical institutional food. So to the point earlier, when things we're sort of hitting this point where, Congress will do one of two things. They'll either do something substantial I guess there's a wide range, but in all likelihood, they will reach a deal of some kind. But I suppose there is this chance. It's not it's a non-zero probability that they will get hung up in some way and, decide that they're better off blaming the other side for no deal than making a deal, that sort of thing. That would have a fairly dramatic negative impact on trucking. And the reason would be is that number one, you would have the demand reduction from all of that cash going away. And then conversely, you would have, from the perspective of the carrier, I'm speaking, you would have a lot less, pressure against adding capacity. So there would probably be a period of time, given that we've seen such a strong spot environment, where you would have, carriers probably adding back too many drivers just when they actually should be holding pat. It's still a very, in my mind, it's still a somewhat delicate situation, even though right now it's looking pretty strong for the carriers.
Yeah, we have not seen nearly the trucking bankruptcies that we thought we would, and I'm glad to see that. There's still, there's still some people that are probably in water way over their head. With very expensive equipment that's not getting utilized or that they just paid too much for. But still, I don't think, we saw Comcar, I think it was last month, go under, or 2 months ago. But there hasn't been a whole lot of them yet. Now, maybe that's because, the government funding has certainly prevented that. I don't know.
If you look at the amount of money, I mean, it's a pretty substantial amount of money. I looked at the Small Business Administration data, and I did some numbers, ran some numbers, and the amount of money that went specifically to trucking from the Paycheck Protection Program ranges from a low of $4.5 billion up to a high of $13.5. And, it's probably a lot more than $4.5 million, and I'm going to guess it's considerably less than 13.5, but it's a substantial amount of money that will certainly help carriers survive. And then on top of that, you have obviously the you have a lot of truck financing companies, a lot of OE financing companies. They have no incentive to take the equipment back right now because there's at this point no demand. Although that could be changing. I mean, we saw a strong month for orders in June. It looks like the used market is firming up a little. But again, I think it's still fairly delicate because it's all based on really what's happening in the spot market and what's happening in this freight that we're seeing now. I am concerned that the freight volume we see now is not part of a long-term recovery as much as it is part of a restocking of more of the retail and industrial supplies like we saw with grocery back in March.
Right.
So we haven't had the panic buying, obviously, but you know, all of the money that got spent in May and June by people who had, you know, money given to them by the government. I mean, you know, putting aside the unemployment benefits, you know, we had the $1,200 per person in the U.S. And, you know, so a lot of that money got spent, and that is going to be a drain, or what, you know, was a drain on inventories. Now, the inventory sales ratio back in April was extraordinarily high. It came down quite a bit in May. It was still pretty high. But my guess is that when we get the June data, that it's probably going to be below where it was going into the crisis, because I think we had a lot more consumption in May and June than we had production or imports, you know, to backfill. So, you know, I'm going to predict that we're, you know, we had a inventory sales ratio that was the highest on record of 1.67 back in April. It came down to 1.51, which is, you know, still the highest since the early 1990s. But I wouldn't be too surprised if that came down by a similar amount and we were in the, you know, the mid 1.3s, maybe even the low point 1.3s. And if that's the case, I think that could explain why we've seen such a surge in June and July. It's because, you know, we've had a lot of need to replace that.
Right.
You know, a lot of it is, it's difficult to figure out because we don't have a model for, you know, having gone through all of this before. So, you know, it's still, unfortunately, still, you know, 4 months into this thing, it's still more guesswork than we would like. But,
you know, even our political and financial leaders, they're guessing as well. We don't know where from where I sit anyways, we kind of don't know where the next gremlin is hiding. You know, yesterday, if you heard the news, Briggs & Stratton going bankrupt, like I was shocked. And they were blaming it on COVID. And I just shook my head and I thought, you know, from what I know, people were at home and they were buying pressure washers and lawnmowers and stuff and leaf blowers.
Absolutely. I mean, that was one of the four. If you look at retail sales, there were only four, you know, categories that did better during the pandemic than they actually grew sales during the pandemic, in other words, and that was one of the categories, you know, the building materials and garden supplies, which, you know, is sort of like Home Depot and Lowe's and those businesses, those were, you know, in the top four in growth. Food and beverage obviously was one of those. Non-store retail was one, and actually the leader of them all was the category that is sporting goods, hobby stores, music or musical instruments, and bookstores, which is sort of an odd grouping. And it's also, you know, I'm kind of like flummoxed as to try to figure out, okay, where is part of that is that the base is kind of low for those stores. You know, those are not high volume stores. So it doesn't take a whole lot of sales probably to increase the percentage. So a lot of people going to bookstores and buying puzzles, jigsaw puzzles could be doing
yeah.
that. But that was actually the leader on a percentage basis. If you look at June retail sales relative to February, seasonally adjusted. And, you know, the growth in that category is like 25%. But to your point about, you know, Briggs & Stratton, it is sort of hard to see. I kind of wonder whether what people really spent the more amount of money on was mulch and, you know, plants and fertilizer, you know, stuff to do landscaping, maybe more so than doing fix-it projects. And of course, you know, a power tool is more of a capital investment that, you know, people may or may not have already had. So, you know, I can kind of see that, although, you know, it really doesn't ring true to me. I think in a lot of cases it's, you know, it's easier, especially when you think about the people running the companies. Obviously, they're going to be looking to move to other jobs soon, and you would rather blame it on COVID than on your mismanagement. So,
yes. Isn't that convenient?
Yes, yes.
When you look at what's
but clothing stores, you know, Brooks Brothers is hardly a shock. It's kind of surprising that Brooks Brothers had not already had to file, you know, Chapter 11, just because, I mean, who wears suits anymore? You know, even if you are traveling, it's just it's kind of an old fashioned business, you know.
Yeah, good point. Newscasters wear them. I noticed that. Matter of fact, one of our guys got married last week in Denver, and there was a picture of him and his new bride, and he didn't even have a tie on. You know, and that's the new world.
Yeah.
You don't wear a suit to meetings. When I meet with bankers now, they're quite often wearing golf shirts. It's a different world.
Bankers are not wearing suits anymore, you know things have changed. So.
Exactly. Well, they haven't worn them in a long time. You know, the banker comes to see me, and he usually has, at best, he's got a sports coat on or he's got a windbreaker. You know,
right,
the days
right.
Bankers wearing their three-piece suits, it's over, unless you're probably dealing with the chairman of the bank. He probably wears a suit every day, but other than that, no, his VPs and sales guys are all, they're business casual. It's a different world today.
Yep.
When you look at the longer term ramifications of what COVID's done to global supply chains and this, you know, a lot of talk about, reshoring or, you know, taking manufacturing back to North America, Do you think that will happen? And if it does, when do you think that the logistics industry will start to see the effects of that?
You know, I'm a skeptic on that, because I don't know how many times in my career I've heard, well, you know, this is going to lead to nearshoring or reshoring, and it never does. And in this case, you could build a case, well, why should the pandemic make a difference? Because it is a pandemic. It is a global event. And if anything, the experience is that different countries in the world are experiencing different times. It's almost more of a hedge to have production in multiple places than to have it all concentrated. Now, that is not how we would normally have thought of this until 4 months ago. Because we normally think of the U.S. as we're the place where stuff like this doesn't happen. You know, we have terrorist attacks, you know, once every couple of generations, things like that. But, you know, the idea of having a pandemic is just something that was, you know, foreign to us. And so I think, you know, that the idea that, well, you know, I would say that 4 months ago, I think that might have been the theory. You know, I remember writing a commentary at the end of February, right when all of this sort of blew up as an issue. You know, right when the Dow Jones tanked, and it was right before the Truckload Carriers Association conference. I remember, and which was the last event I ended up going to, which was at the beginning of March. But it was. You know, then the concern was all about China, and it wasn't really on anyone's radar yet that this was actually an issue for us. And I think when I look at that, I don't see any, and I haven't seen any signs of it, because the other issue is that if we were going to see that, I think we would have seen it in the last couple of years over trade. And in reality, what we really saw was that Vietnam has become little China. And, you know, Vietnam took up a lot of the slack. It went from being a very, you know, pretty tiny trading partner to now, I think, our 10th largest trading partner. And so, you know, in a lot of ways, it comes down to labor costs and, you know, labor costs trump, trump transportation costs, you know, by and large. Now, if we start to see things like, you know, if we start to see shipping companies, you know, ocean shipping companies going out of business, and we start to see, you know, rates for those things start to get hard, I think that could actually have an impact. You know, if the actual transportation starts to become, you know, a much bigger cost, then I think we start to see nearshoring and reshoring as an issue. The other factor, of course, is the new USMCA. The requirements for greater North American content certainly could drive a little bit of that as well. So, you know, if you start adding some of these factors together, yes, I could kind of see it. But I don't see it happening very quickly, in part because I think right now people are just still trying to manage through the crisis, and you know, they're not going to make any major moves until they really get a feel for the lay of the land. But you know, it is certainly something. But I actually think USMCA probably has more of an impact than the COVID crisis has in that whole that whole scheme.
So there, you think things will stay the same pretty much as far as having foreign countries make even our personal protection equipment?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. When we start getting into things like things that we consider to be critical to our well-being, that might be a little different. I mean, we've seen that become a controversy. I don't know. I'm not sure I know enough about that segment. I think for now, we're doing what we have to do to get by. And of course, you know, I think everybody's looking at this as, you know, we'll eventually have a vaccine. The question is when. But that is, that's obviously a hot button, issue. The other, of course, issue, and this has got probably not a whole lot to do with freight, since it's more about a technology, but, you know, the whole 5G thing and, you know, that also being under foreign, you know, the technology behind that being under foreign control. I think that is a big concern. I think that is in some ways a much bigger concern, only because it's obviously a very long, you know, it's a longer term concern. And it is a concern, I think, that, that is shared not only by people, but, you know, by businesses, probably in a way that, you know, the PPE is a little bit less, it's probably more of a political and a consumer issue than it is a business issue.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny. It's one of those things where it all kind of joins together, the politics and the business. And there's a lot of fear about that 5G technology out there and which way it's going to go. There's some people that have a lot of apprehension about it. But it seems like a lot of countries are, bit by bit, everybody's adapting it.
Yeah, and I think as long as we can have North American players in that, everything's fine. I think the worry is that it'll be something that North America is beholden, to the rest of the world. And, I think there's a lot of concern. As time has generally proven, though, the flow of capital always seems to still be there. And, we're in a very much a codependent world. Asia needs North America and Europe, really as much as we need Asia. So I think in a lot of ways that's why things haven't fallen apart, more than they have. I mean, even during the trade war, you certainly could have seen that, spiral even more out of control than it did. And I think it's, large part because while China now is, instead of being the number one trading partner, is now the number three trading partner, it's still a solid number three. It is still far, far and away ahead of Japan. And I think that, there are a lot of people on both sides of the Pacific that have a vested interest in it not deteriorating that much more. I was asked by a journalist recently about, all of the political stuff with China and what, how I thought that was going to affect trucking, which fundamentally is kind of what we're talking about. And I really don't see, like, to, you know, given the experience we had out of the trade war, where I did not detect one iota of domestic benefit from that in terms of production. You know, even in the most supposedly sensitive areas. And part of that, however, I will say, was because of labor availability. You know, the labor market was extremely tight.
Yes.
I guess if you wanted to look at a silver lining, you know, coming out of this, that I suppose that's one issue that goes away, or doesn't go away, but it certainly becomes less of an issue, I would suspect. You know, even that is, you know, potentially temporary. I mean, it's not difficult at all to see a scenario in which a year from now we have more or less fully recovered, and could be in a pretty similar situation to where we were in February. I don't think unemployment will be as low as 3.5% in the United States that soon. I think it may take another, you know, year or more to get to that, in large part because I think we've seen a lot of businesses fail. You know, even with the government support, I think there's a lot of businesses that will not come back from this. You know, a lot in leisure and hospitality, but still their jobs. And the reality is that when you lose retailers, you know, the big box retailers can sell the same amount with fewer workers, and that has, you know, that has implications on, you know, unemployment. So it's, you know, I don't see a snapback regardless of what Congress does into anything remotely like the environment we had in February. Now, I do think that, you know, by the end of the year we could be down to, you know, 7% unemployment, 8% unemployment. That's certainly very feasible, but I don't think that getting below that is going to be very, you know, it's going to be very quick.
Yeah, no, either do I. I think that we're, I personally, I think this is a long dance ahead of us. I hope I'm wrong, but, and there will be, we don't know what they are, but there will be new industries that come out of this that we never thought of. You know, if you look back at 2008, you know, a lot of things went sideways, but, you know, you had companies come up, you know, Uber, Airbnb, and a whole bunch of other ones that really hit the ground running and did very well. And there will be new winners, and there will be, you know, and there's going to be losers. And, you know, unfortunately, there's, as my son Doc was just saying before the show, when we were having a chat about, you know, it goes back to Darwin's theory, even in business, you know, and sometimes you do need to call the herd. And some of these companies were during the period of time when everybody looked to be doing fairly well, these people were hanging on by a thread. And this is a, unfortunately, those companies just aren't making it at this point. Now, some of them are 100% innocent, and they ran good businesses, and they were just in the wrong industry, you know, and anything to do with travel or hospitality, trade shows, things like that. Are they ever going to come back? You know, and I got a questionnaire last week, I think it was, from Freeman, the people that put on all the shows in Chicago and Vegas, a questionnaire about digital, you know, what I thought of digital trade shows and things like that, because obviously these guys are really, really feeling it. And, you know, they were the king of the castle for decades. They built a big, beautiful business. And, you know, we've had several trade shows where we were supposed to attend or exhibit canceled. And you know what? Financially, it looks to be a winner because we didn't have to spend the money flying people around. But, you know, you do miss that part of the equation where you're shaking hands with either suppliers or customers, and you're having dinners and things like that. And sometimes the best deals ever are done at a trade show, you know, either right there or that night having dinner with people. That's where business is done. It may be a whole new type of business, but everybody suffers, I think. You know, all those restaurateurs and the the hotel people and the cab and Uber drivers, et cetera, right down the, you know, right down to the coat check person at that restaurant or bar. You know, that money's
And when we start looking at, you know, some maybe long-term issues that directly affect trucking, you know, we're now, 4 months into this, and I think a lot of people have gotten used to having things delivered or they've gotten used to curbside or whatever.
Well,
and especially the fact that we had the renewed surge, I think it even encourages that more. So, you know, one of the questions I have is that, you know, obviously one of the very few industries that has added jobs, at least through pretty much the entire time, was, you know, the category that's called couriers and messengers, which is sort of like parcel local delivery, you know, obviously Grubhub and Amazon Prime and, you know, DoorDash and all those people. They've added a substantial number of jobs. You know, they've added about 56,000 jobs seasonally adjusted since February. You know, at the same time where the trucking industry has dropped about 90,000 or 85,000. And, you know, it's interesting because I have a suspicion that I don't think this is going to happen right away. But, you know, if we do have a period of time where the trucking industry does not continue to rebound, I wouldn't be surprised to see drivers lost to that sector. Now, I you know, a year ago, I would have said it's not going to happen because trucking pays, you know, on average much better than those jobs. You know, a tractor trailer driver makes considerably more money. However, you know, having a job as opposed to not having a job is a factor. The, you know, there's a couple other factors. And you know, one of them is that, you know, the ability to not be out on the road, which, you know, is, we all know that is very clearly a downside for a certain sector of drivers. In other words, they don't, you know, they honestly don't want to be home. That's why they're in trucking. But I think there is a large number that, you know, just sort of fell into trucking because, you know, the pay was very competitive relative to other types of jobs that they were qualified to do or thought they were qualified to do. But now, you know, they see the ability to drive, but to be home every night and possibly even have another job to make up the difference, another part-time job because of, you know, flexible hours. And then I think the third element, and this is the one I think is the one that is probably for trucking the scariest in terms of labor competition, is the fact that you're talking about an unregulated, you know, workforce by and large. So, you know, if you're driving small commercial vehicle, under 10,000 pounds, you know, unless you're hauling hazmat, you're not subject to federal regulation in the United States. And so, you know, there's a whole host of things, including drug testing and CDL. Of course, you don't have to have a CDL anyway until you get to 26,000 pounds. But there's a whole host of things you don't have to worry about. You may have to worry about them based on what your, you know, corporate policy is, or there may be individual states. But I think that is obviously the government is starting to come to grips with that. There's a Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration last week had a it periodically has meetings of its advisory committee that it established years ago. And probably the biggest issue they addressed last week was this issue. You know, do we need regulation of companies that are doing deliveries, you know, quite often of packages that are in interstate commerce, but they're doing so, you know, without crossing state lines, with vehicles that are, you know, under 10,000 pounds. And, you know, if I had to pick one of the things that could be a structural change, it is that. Now, if we look at how that affects trucking, in a lot of ways, it kind of depends on, well, how is this being executed? Because in a lot of cases, you know, we look at, you know, Target.com and Walmart.com and so on. They're using the store essentially the fulfillment center, and it is the customer that comes to the store and picks it up. Now, I don't think that really affects truckload very much. I think, you know, all it does is it means more product going to the store. And whether that product is delivered inside the walls or outside the walls of that store is sort of immaterial. And it also doesn't really affect, you know, obviously too much in terms of delivery, in terms of final mile. But to the extent that we have goods delivered directly to the consumer, you know, I think that that definitely has an impact depending on the business model involved and, you know, where that transportation is taking place. You know, we could see shorter hauls for truckload as truckload becomes principally a, you know, a big distribution center to a small distribution center type environment, or obviously to a manufacturing facility to a distribution center, but not, you know, not so much to retail, you know, not, not that typical retail delivery. I think there are some things that are coming out of consumer preference that is still evolving out of this that we don't know whether it's permanent or not. It goes on, the more likely it becomes part of people's just sort of standard operating procedure. For example, I haven't been to a restaurant in months, you know. It's just one of the risks that I don't want to take. And so that's probably going to continue. You know, even after we have a vaccine, I'll probably just sort of get used to not going to restaurants. So,
You know what? I haven't had a bad meal since March, since the last time I ate at a restaurant. Now we have, we've ordered in sushi twice, you know, or actually three times since March, and twice has been in the last week. But other than that, no, we've done exactly like you. Now, I do know an awful lot of people that use various services, and they can get Uber Eats for one, where you can order your dessert and a bag comes from McDonald's even, if you're living in a metropolitan area. I don't think if you're living in certain rural areas, you're going to get that. But there are, you know, there's all sorts of services that do allow for that final mile. And I think that is going to be, you know, be ingrained in people because of the convenience. I know that, you know, my children use Instacart, for example, for groceries, and kind of look at me as if I have two heads because I still go to the grocery store. And you know what? When you look at it, they can use this Instacart service for the same price as what I pay, and the stuff is just as good. What do I need to go and stand in line to get into a grocery store for and stand in line to pay? Everything comes to my door within an hour and a half or 2 hours. Not a bad deal. So, you know, I see things like, you know, those types of things. And so many people I know are using, you know, the Amazons of the world and all these other, you know, for every product imaginable, from, you know, cleaning supplies to water to groceries, depends where you live, of course. But it makes sense. You don't have to go out. And especially if we're going to be faced with, you know, this pandemic or even future ones, I just think that we will continue to see more and more of these home deliveries. And it's probably for any of our listeners looking for an area to get into where there's probably a huge future, it is that home delivery market, because I think we're just scratching the surface. I think that the younger generation and future generations are going to live that way. Especially with, you know, you look at everything between some of the unrest even in, you know, in some of the cities. And I'm talking about small cities where you would never expect to have protests and riots and things. And you've had them, you know, in the United States and in Canada. Do you really want to go out to get your groceries and have to, you know, have to deal with a freeway that's blocked because people are protesting something?
Right, right, absolutely. It's a lot of that is just it's just going to be very interesting. And you know, I think people overblow. I mean, you know, especially on the e-commerce thing, you know, I think a lot of people forget. Well, the goods are not going to magically appear from, you know, they're not being taken directly from the supplier to your home by a Sprinter van. So it's not like you know, truckload transportation goes away, and in fact, in some situations, it could you know even be spurred. But that's why it's important to watch closely, because there are, you know, very clear winners and losers in all of this, depending on how you, you know, even who your customers are. You know, I mean, you know, again, going back to the beginning of the conversation, you know, depending on, even if you're refrigerated, you could have been much better off in March, depending on who your typical customer is, than if you had a customer who did something that was functionally the same, but had a, you know, was delivered to a different venue. You know, so it's just, you know, some of that is, you know, obviously you can't predict. No, nobody saw that coming. I don't think anybody would have said, you know, in case of a pandemic, you know, keep in mind all the restaurants are going to close and all the airports are going to be, you know, closed down. So don't, you know, try not to get too tied to institutional food. Well, I mean, nobody would have said that. Of course, now that'll be the first thing anybody thinks about. And of course, everybody is always trying to solve the last problem. And, you know, as opposed to trying to figure out what the next new problem might be. But, you know, who knows what it is? It's almost by definition, we don't know.
Do you think we are heading for a food shortage?
For a food shortage?
Yep. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. You know, you and I have actually had this conversation. Some of the things are unclear as to the degree to which, for example, a lot of the pandemic has affected, you know, produce, affected, you know, the growing seasons and things like that, in terms of labor. I certainly have not seen any indications of it, but it is, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, if we're not paying attention to it, it'll be upon us, and then it's, you know, probably too late to do anything about. So, I don't know what have you, you know, what are you seeing?
Well, what we have seen is we've seen an outbreak of the virus in amongst people, the migrant labor that our farmers bring in, and the federal government closed down one of the bigger greenhouse operations in Leamington, Ontario, which is just over the bridge from Detroit on the Canadian side. And they call that area the Sun Parlor because it's the furthest south region of Canada. And as a result, there are several huge greenhouse operations. So there's an awful lot of the virus in that area. They closed down one big grower for a couple of weeks. Other growers were obviously very reluctant to have their staff checked for fear of getting closed down. So it was a wake-up call, to tell you the truth. You know, my daughter's been warning me about this for a long time, and it's like her prediction had come true to some degree. And of course, usually that...
Well, and we certainly saw some, you know, some scares in the meatpacking industry in the United States as well, you know, in various areas. And they did not seem to have panned out to be, you know, to have been a huge problem, but that's not to say that they still can't.
Well, not as bad as they could have been. But you know what? I have to tell you, there were some weeks when I was doing the grocery shopping during the middle of the pandemic, where you went to the meat section and there was not a lot of poultry or meat, you know, and what people were doing at that point was dealing with smaller suppliers that were, you know, that were selling to the restaurant trade that had lost their business, and they were buying freezer loads of meat from those people. And filling their freezers that way, and it was a win-win. Now I do have to interrupt for a sec, because I see, as Rico always says, time is running faster than we are, and we only have a couple minutes left. Just in case we lose you, we want this show is recorded, and people can look it up and listen to it anytime after tonight, I believe.
Is there a way that people can get hold of you, Avery, if they have any questions or anything? You are certainly a wealth of knowledge here. You know so much.
Sure. I mean, the easiest way to find all of my contact information would just be to go to our website, which is ftrintel.com, which is ftrintel.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Avery Weiss. Those are probably the easiest ways for people to reach me.
Well, you certainly know a lot of stuff. If anybody wants to reach me, best way to get me probably these days, just email me. It's very simple. Just Chuck, C-H-U-C-K, at Traffics, TRAFFIX.com. If I can help you in any way, need to get set up, I will hold your hand and get you set up with Traffics. Or if you're having an issue somewhere in your business and I can lend some support, don't hesitate to ask. I'm always willing to help. But if we're getting back to what we were talking about, because we only got about 80 seconds left, that's what people were doing here. We did see a shortage of meat to some degree, not as bad as, and we're in Southern Ontario, which is very well served, but I think some areas did get hit with limits of meat.
Yeah, and we had the same issue for a while, and right now we still have, you know, various outages. The big thing now is paper towels. They seem to have replenished toilet paper, but paper towels is still an issue. So it's interesting, and it's probably a diversion from one to the other. But
I agree. Well, we've got about 30 seconds left, Avery. I want to thank you for joining us tonight. You are certainly one of my most favorite guests that comes on. You just know so much, and I look forward to having you on again in the near future. To our listeners, thank you so much for giving us an hour of your time. You could have been anywhere else. As Rico said, keep it between the mustard and the mayonnaise. As I always say, catch you on the flip-flop. We'll see you next week. Stay healthy. Stay safe. God bless you. Good night.